Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Listening to the Strangeology Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Foran, and this is your place to explore the world of weird, from cryptids and creatures to UFOs, aliens, the paranormal, forbidden knowledge, conspiracies, and more. All right, welcome back to the show, everyone. Coming up on today's episode is kicking off the spooky season with a chat with the author M.R. Gorga, all about demons and evil entities that are potentially manipulating humanity and the world at large for nefarious purposes. Before we get started, if you want to help support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/strangeology and join the growing members community I'm building over there. And of course, shout out to all the members. Your support means the world to me, and without you, I don't know what I'd be doing. Becoming a member means that you have access to some awesome perks depending on the tier, but I think that most folks who sign up love the early access to episodes and being able to listen to my exclusive episode extension, Strangeology Beyond, which are sometimes entire episodes by themselves. And of course, there's also discounts to my merch shop, exclusive merch, VIP, Discord access, and more. Again, that's patreon.com/strangeology. Now, when this episode releases, I'm actually going to be on vacation at the beach. So if anything wild in the world happens before then, I guess I'll have to cover it in the next episode. And this is actually kind of my first time doing a pre-recorded thing like well in advance. I'm usually always kind of, flying by the seat of my pants with getting things out on time. Anyway, so it's kind of cool to get some stuff done early. I did want to give a big shout out to the Sasquatch Culling Festival, which happened in Whitehall, New York, this past Saturday, September 24th, as I'm recording this. I'll definitely be going back next year for sure. The whole event was just wild, and I wasn't expecting it to be as big and as busy as it was. Before the event even started, like, people were already pouring into the park where it was at, like maybe even 30 to 45 minutes before the official start time. I got there and I actually brought my family along for the first time to one of these things. So I was, definitely, it was cool for them to see like how it all worked and everything like that. And to have it be such a successful day, was really cool. There were tons of vendors, and I really only had one or two chances to walk around. I did one quick loop, and then other time like going out to go get like food or something. But I got to say hello and meet Mike Ann from Where's My Sage podcast, Eli Watson, who you may know from his work with Small Town Monsters, came up to my booth, and I, you know, wasn't expecting to see him. So it was cool to meet him in person. Emily Fleur from The Forest Fleur, who does a lot of Bigfoot research. And also I wanted to give a big shout out to Tim Banal from Coast to Coast AM, who was at the event that day. He came up to my booth and we chatted for a bit. He did a little like Facebook Live thing, which was really kind of cool, and showed some of my merch. If you don't know, he does all the blog writing on Coast to Coast AM's website. So that was a pretty awesome moment, pretty cool connection. Yeah, it was kind of just like, whoa, all right. and then like I ran out of business cards like halfway through the day. I usually bring like a pretty like hefty stack, and like people were just grabbing them left and right. So if you grabbed a card this past weekend, as I'm, you know, recording this and you're now listening to the show, welcome aboard and thanks for your support and checking out the show. And just before we get started, one more funny final thing was, you know, after the event was over, got everything packed back up in the car and we're heading home, and we stop at a restaurant on the way home. And just before we're done eating, Tim from Coast to Coast peeks his head around the booth and he's like, "Hey, are you following me?" And like no idea that he was at the same restaurant. So that was really, really a funny thing there. So yeah, definitely going to be doing this event next year. And the final event that I will be vending at this year is, of course, CryptidCon in Lexington, Kentucky, between November 19th and 20th. That's going to be a huge event, lots of speakers, lots of vendors, and definitely looking forward to it. Last year was a real fun time, so definitely hope to see some of y'all out there. Anyway, why don't we get into the interview portion of the show? M.R. Gorga is a best-selling Amazon author and paranormal researcher who has a harrowing warning for mankind about forces at work out there who don't have the best of intentions for us. So let's get into it. The opinions and views expressed and stated by guests are their own, and their appearance on the show does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent, or reflect the views, positions, or official policy of the Strangeology Podcast. Thank you, and enjoy the show. All right, welcome back to the show, everyone. Today's guest is really going to ring in the spooky season this year. I've got M.R. Gorga with me today. He's a researcher of the paranormal and the author of the book Demons Among Us. So, hey, M.R., thanks so much for hanging out today. Can you tell my audience a little bit more about what you do and what your background is? How did you get into the paranormal?
Well, I mean, so my background as a writer, I've been writing since a little kid. One of the stories I like to tell is I started in fourth grade. And so, my teacher at the fourth grade teacher, he gave a class a writing assignment. And, I wrote some creepy story about some mummy on a murder spree, which was content for someone that age, just should not be thinking about that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So he calls my, so I handed it in. I'm kind of nervous, you know, because of the subject matter. And so lo and behold, he calls my parents that night. And I was like, oh no, I'm in so much trouble right now for this story. And so, but it was quite, his reaction was quite the opposite. He was like, "You told my parents, you know, your son has a real gift for writing. You need to get him enrolled in the Young Author Society immediately." And
there
so,
you go.
yeah. So it was writing has always been there since a very early age, and I think the paranormal thing kind of fed in because I kind of grew up in a time of Amityville Horror had come out. And Son of Sam was running around, you know, New York, yeah, shooting people up. And so it was like this real weird eeriness that kind of crept over New York and New Jersey. And
right.
And it was just that's when people started really locking their doors, I think. And so I think it just kind of like had this really strange effect on me, and why my parents had allowed me to watch the Amityville Horror at 7 or 8 years old remains a mystery, but I did. And it just kind of had some kind of effect where I just kind of, was very intrigued by it. So it sort of sparked my interest in the paranormal. And so I've been writing ever since.
Wow. That's definitely really interesting. So would you consider that kind of like, that's kind of like your jumping point, your catalyst for getting into this kind of stuff. Now, as far as your book, Demons Among Us, this is a book that has a lot of stuff in it. Can you speak to like where you got the idea to write this book?
Yeah, the book it has a ton of stuff in it. And it covers a wide swath or a wide spectrum of the paranormal. So really what Demons Among Us does is it rips the veil of the paranormal to show what's really happening behind the scenes, and how these dark forces and demonic entities really function in the world around us, and how you may be influenced by them without even knowing it. Because we can't see the unseen world. So we don't understand fully what's happening behind there. Demons Among Us actually helps shed the light on these things, so we can so you know what to look out for. But it also covers personal stories of my own, as well as the first fully documented eyewitness account of demonic possession in American history, and that was 2 decades before the Salem witch trials.
Wow.
So there was a real historic deep dive there. I really researched 350 years. I physically touched the actual parchments that I was researching, yellow flowing, yellow brittle parchment with black flowing script. I literally was able to touch and feel documents from the 1600s in order to really bring this story to life. What was the other question there?
I guess just, like your inspiration for writing this book.
Yeah.
And you're mentioning, right. Kind of having a playbook of like what to watch out for with this kind of phenomenon. As far as your research goes, it's really important, I think, to get on the ground and go to sources and locations to really get to the bottom of things like that. Now with other elements in the book, were there other cases where you did real deep dives on research like that?
Everything is very, very meticulously researched. All the stories that are in there, and we can get to this stuff later, people who've killed their families on medications and, meticulously researched stuff. But to get to your question, what sparked this whole thing was there was a time I was being assaulted nightly by these demonic entities. And so I would wake up out of a dead sleep being choked by invisible steely hands gripped around my neck and, taking my breath away. So you can't crawl, you can't cry out, and you definitely can't pry these hands off. And so you just kind of wake up like, and so there were those kinds of episodes. There was evil whisperings and some sort of unintelligible language, some kind of demonic language, like they were speaking something into my being, and I don't know what it was, but I imagine it was nothing good. And it kind of sounds like buzzing bees in a sense, but it's garbly, but that's a whole other story. But
interesting.
And then there's the chest suppressions, you know, kind of pushing you into the bed and bitings and scratchings and other minor incidences. So it was about like a week long of these demonic assaults. And it really made me mad. And so, cause you know, I know that these demonic forces, they operate in utter darkness and secrecy. The last thing they do is want the light shed on them and their tactics exposed. So I said, all right, you're going to hit me. I'm hitting back. And that's why I wrote Demons Among Us.
Yeah.
And it's a number one bestseller on Amazon.
Wow. That's congratulations. Yeah. That's big.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, so you mentioned it was kind of like a week. Have you had any other encounters or attempts by these forces to, you know, kind of weasel their way back into your life since you've written the book, or is it kind of like an ongoing battle, if you will?
It's an ongoing battle. I mean, I'll have minor incidences where, you know, something will just sort of like wake me up out of a dead sleep, or something yells or something grabs like your leg, or, you know, so it's always some kind of weird thing to pull you out of sleep. And some of the big, you know, in Demons Among Us, I cover some of the, you know, the big incidences like that really kind of bring like the, you know, the wow or the holy shit factor to sure. all this, you know. Excuse my French.
No worries, but, you're good.
But you know, so it's the horror factors, the big moments are the ones I put in my book. But one of the things that had happened to me afterwards. Recently, very, very, very strange and creepy event was that last year my father had passed away, and I was cleaning out his closet, and he had, you know, some old clothes in there and stuff. So I was cleaning out some old clothes, and there was like an old faded green sweater, and there was a Miami Hurricanes t-shirt that I found. And so I went to bed that night, and then I sensed something like in the room, and as I was going to bed, and I look up, and my father's standing there wearing this green faded sweater, and he's holding the Miami Hurricanes shirt, but it was folded up in his hand. And I'm looking at him, and I'm like, it is my father.
Yeah.
To an absolute T, right? And just to give you a visual, my dad looked a lot like Danny DeVito.
Okay.
And so he was a short Italian guy.
Yeah.
And you know, he looked very, very much like you know, like Danny DeVito's brother, right?
There you go.
And just to give you a visual. So he's standing there, he's holding the shirt, and he's wearing this faded green thing. And I know immediately that it's not my father because he would never have been wearing that shirt. That sweater, having been that old and worn, right?
Yeah.
So I know something is wrong. And not only that, you can feel like the creepiness, the unnerving sensation coming off of him.
Yeah.
So he comes in my room, I'm just looking. I don't say nothing. And I'm just looking like suspiciously. And so he comes and he walks in and he comes in to try to give me this awkward hug while I'm laying down. And so he comes in and he gives me this awkward hug, and he pulls his face back, and when he pulls his face back, the sides of his face are melting off like with like ash and, you know, cinder.
Yeah.
Burning off at the sides. So, and in the middle was this skull.
Yeah.
And it had two gleaming yellow eyes, like little yellow globes just beaming like into me. And the skull itself was, the skull itself was very, very interesting because it wasn't like a white skull or whatever, but it was like the semblance of a skull, but black, and looking into its face was like looking into space. Like there was no end to it. It was really weird. And it was just like beaming into my face, like trying to scare me.
Yeah.
And terrify me. And it was terrifying, don't get me wrong, but like I've been through like a lot of this stuff, and I knew from the outset that really wasn't my father.
Yeah, yeah.
And so basically it was like a demonic entity impersonating my father that was trying to, you know, horrify me. And that was actually pretty scary. But I knew from the outset that something wasn't right.
Yeah. And, now, can I interject for a second? Sure. Now, did this entity look like as real as you or I standing in the room, or was there any kind of like, something uncanny valley about it? Maybe like a little bit of like translucence, or there's just something like off before it kind of revealed the skull behind its mask using your father's image.
Right. No, it was precise. I mean,
interesting.
It was, yeah. Yeah. Because these forces, they have they're spirit beings, or, you know, so these forces, they can transform into any image or person, or dead or alive, that they want to. And, you know, they've been around a long, long time, since they've been here since, you know, day one. So they know how my father walks, they know how my father talks, they know what my father, what he sounds like, they knows what he, you know, his scent, and just, you know, the influxes in his voice. So they know all this stuff, so they can mimic it perfectly.
Yeah.
And didn't, there was, didn't,
yeah, didn't get the sweater right though. Right.
That's the funny thing. Yeah. That was the really funny thing, was like, well, why did you wear that sweater? If you would have wore some sort of LL Bean shirt, like with plaid on it, then it would have been more convincing. But once I saw like the, you know, the faded collar and the old, you know, the old sweater, I'm like, he wouldn't have been caught dead in that.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No.
Was there something you just wanted to continue, or, I guess a question I had was, do these things, are they locked into certain locations, or do they follow you around? And I guess that's kind of already answered with, unless this was an entity that was at your father's place, do you think it's connected in any way with what you experience in your own home, or?
No. So yeah, that's a layered answer. Okay. So, let me just explain like how the demonic works in a sense. They're called principalities or powers, right? And so they have reign, where they have dominion over specific locations of a city, of a nation. So you'll have different principalities over different places of the country or a nation. So they are spread out or whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
But this one is spread out over different locations. But this one wasn't anything that like lived in the home or anything like that. It's just, you know, it's just an appearance or a manifestation at whatever, for whatever reason, at that time. It's not like this entity lives in my home and it, I have to deal with it on a daily basis. Gotcha. But they kind of just come at whim. Mm-hmm. The way I see it, I mean, I'm sure they have some reason behind their doings, but from the way I see it, it's just, they just kind of come out of the clear blue.
Yeah. Oh, that's, you know, a little disconcerting, right?
Well, you never know what's going to happen at any given night, you know, like, you know, go, okay, what's going to happen tonight, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Wow. So one thing I've been wondering is, so you mentioned that the first recorded case of a possession in America was pre-Salem witch trial by a couple of decades. Were there any like oral histories oral traditions that you ran across for your book that date even further back. Like, I'm thinking ancient Rome, ancient Egypt, Dark Ages type of stuff.
Yeah. Well, just to focus on America real quick, when we first came over from England, what we were doing was we were escaping religious persecution. And William Bradford, when he was the governor or first governor, he had wrote about a girl, Alice or Alcee Young. But it was very brief. It's like, yeah, we hung Alcee Young for witchcraft. And basically, but that's all you get.
Yeah.
So you don't get any backstory, anything about who this girl was or what she was doing or anything. It was just basically a blip on the radar. So we have been dealing with witchcraft in various forms ever since we arrived here, again from religion. It was like 1620. We came 1622 or so, and so it was like it was very early on. I don't know the precise date.
Sure.
But yeah, so we've been dealing with witchcraft for, you know, in that regard, and demonic forces and things for a very, very long time as a nation. And the reason why I say that this was the first fully documented account of demonic possession in American history is because this was the first account that was written in a journal blow by blow. So what was happening was at this point, is the stories between the town minister and his maid servant or his maid who was 16 years old. And she started exhibiting some really strange signs that made this minister kind of raise some eyebrows. So he took to his journal, and date by date, just journaling what was happening to this girl. So we really get a readout of the escalation of what this girl was dealing with and the demonic assaults that she was undergoing. And he wrote about them blow by blow. And the story itself has just kind of been kind of glossed over or passed over historically.
Yeah.
And I thought it was important to have in the book because it was just so utterly horrifying that the story needed to be told, and told in the right manner, because I had to surround the actual culture around the story. So we understood the mindset, we understood the culture, and we understood the social norms of the period that all fed into these really satanic encounters and assaults that happened to this young girl.
Yeah.
But to go back to Europe has always been dealing with witchcraft. There's a story about, was Pendle witches, which were in England. And that was a story that they all started kind of snitching on each other. And all of a sudden, like it all started when the daughter was out in the woods and she saw some man like walking. So she was, and they were very poor. And so she asked him for either a pin or some money, or forget what it was. And he said no. So she cursed the man. And then as he was walking, he fell down what appeared to be like a stroke. He was like half paralyzed, and he ended up, and ended up freaking out. So this incident sparked off this entire case, and they get it investigated. The family names another family, the Chaddox family, and all of a sudden people are being arrested and they're getting put into the castle. The name, but anyway, so they're put in like the witch's tower at the castle, and they're awaiting trial. And so this whole family and the neighbors are eventually like all executed except for one. So this kind of stuff has been going on for a long time. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There was a long period of time in Europe, European history of witch hunts and that kind of stuff. Yeah. And even like werewolf hunts and stuff like that too. That was something I found out about recently, which is interesting piece of history.
Yeah, there's all kinds of crazy stuff out there, but I haven't researched back to like in regards to like demonology. I mean, it's ancient. So, you know, it's biblical and it's ancient. We'll probably start touching on some of those things. It stretches further back than Rome. It stretches back to day one. It stretches back to ancient Israel. It stretches back to, you know, far back before Roman civilization. Well, no, Roman era at the same time, some there, but it does stretch very, very far back.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if these entities have been around since day one, of course they'd, you know, be present since before recorded history, probably, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, what's your opinion on what these entities are? Are they just something that's innate in the universe, or is there a more good versus evil type of thing being waged here?
Yeah, it's definitely a good versus evil. Demons are actually fallen, rebellious angels, fell from heaven, and because they were cast out from heaven in a rebellion that they tried to wage against God, to over Satan or Lucifer. At the time, he wanted to seat himself as God, on the throne of God. And the reason why he thought he could do this is because he was, he became so prideful and arrogant in his position, in his role, in his function, in his beauty. And we'll talk about what he really looks like, as we go, but he exalted himself, and so influential and cunning and manipulative, he knows how to weave an argument and cast doubt. But anyway, I say that because he was so influential, he was able to draw a third of the angels to his cause in his rebellion.
Wow, that many, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's countless. Yeah. It's absolutely countless. Yeah. And so, what had happened was, ultimately, he gets cast out of heaven. He's cast to the earth. Into the cosmos, into the earth. And, you know, just to dispel a myth, people think that he was cast into hell. He wasn't cast into hell. He was cast to the earth. He was cast to the earth with all of his powers, all of his intellect, all of his cunning, all of his authority. The only thing that he had lost was his home. Yeah. And so he still has all of his supernatural powers. And these forces still have all of their supernatural intellect and all of their supernatural powers. And so they are called, and biblically they're called rulers and principalities of the air, and this is their dominion, this is their home.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's what they are.
Now, you mentioned they weren't cast into hell. Right. Does that infer that hell isn't a real place, or is it that you know, lost souls or damned souls go?
Well, it's a very real place, and hell was a place created by God for rebellious spirits. Now, to dispel a myth, like, so Satan is not the king of hell, and he's not ruling souls and things of that nature. He's not king amongst the fire. What hell is actually his prison sentence. Huh. So. And that's reserved for a specific time another judgment. But that has not come yet. And so, but he fears he knows that that's coming, and they fear that, the demons fear that. But that's for a later time, for another judgment. But hell was created for rebellious spirits, human and inhuman.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Now your book gets into possession, of course. How do you distinguish between, you know, someone getting possessed by a demon versus someone who's having like a medical issue or a mental illness.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, I'm not a doctor. So, but I do want to say that there are issues, there are mental issues, and there are disorders. But at the same time, I think there are disorders that people doctors don't understand. It's beyond them. I think there are people who are suffering in a spiritual sense. And what we're trying to do is kind of put a natural remedy or a medication or we're trying to put this Band-Aid on something that we don't truly understand because it's supernatural and spiritual in nature. So we're trying to remedy, give natural remedies to a supernatural ailment. And these people are never going to get set free because they don't understand. So I think there are some people, that do have, mental disorders and things of that nature, not taking anything away. But I do believe that it is time to start taking this spiritual side of this, this thing a little bit more seriously than we have in our past. And just instead of just slapping crazy and schizophrenia or whatever on them, and start looking at this a little more seriously than we have in the past, and then we'll be able to set some of these people free.
I see. Yeah. That's definitely, definitely important to, figure out some kind of distinction. And certainly there's people afflicted by, things that modern science and medicine can't explain. And, I've experienced, medical issues myself throughout my life that, doctors can't explain, until it's like you finally go through the gauntlet of different specialists and stuff. And then they finally figure out what's going on, thankfully. But, gosh, where was I going with that? What are some of the common signs that someone is being possessed by an entity?
Well, possession is actually the extreme form of the demonic. And what possession actually means is that this demon spirit or spirits, there could be, multiple entities within one person. And what that means is that they invade the person bodily. So that's the extreme form. And there's other forms where it's, there's influence, there's harassment, there's oppression, and then there's possession. Gotcha. So so a person has to go through this process before a demonic entity can fully invade their body.
Yeah.
And in one instance, and I'll put it like this. So the paranormal was like this layer cake. So I have to explain yeah. stuff before I explain stuff. Okay.
Yep.
So when we talk about demonic spirits and we talk about demonic entities, what comes to mind are hairy creatures and monsters with horns and gravelly voices and things of that nature. And that's not the case. These are beautiful angels that were fallen from their home. And they can appear in whatever form they want. Yeah. I don't believe they're grotesque manifestation. They're grotesque creatures. I believe they're very beautiful creatures pretending that they want to show up in these ugly forms to freak people out. Okay.
I see.
So there's so many of these things. And they all have names. Like you have a name, I have a name, and everybody listening has a name. And they all have names as well. But we can best recognize them by their function or what they do. And you've heard of like the seven deadly sins, right? Like lust and greed and, avarice and, sloth, right?
Yeah, sure.
And so we could recognize these entities by by how they affect and how they influence, and they're known as spirits of various things, meaning spirits of lust, spirits of greed, spirits of depression, spirits of suicide, spirits of fear. And so these types of things are actually, demonic forces. So when you're struggling with like life control and depression, you may be under the influence of a spirit of depression, and they work in tandem. So you'll have, spirit of depression with a spirit of suicide. And the goal is to kill you, basically, or to have you kill yourself.
Yeah.
And so I said all that to say is that one of the examples I like to say is, because I don't have a better example than Judas in the Bible. And so we know who Judas is, right? Judas was the man who betrayed Jesus.
Right.
He was one of his 12 disciples. Well, Judas had a greed issue. And so Judas's role in Jesus's ministry was he was in charge of the money box or the treasury, right? Mm. And so every now and again, Judas would take from the money box and steal and pocket some coin, right? Yep. and so he had this spirit of greed operating the whole time, right? The 3.5 or 3 years that he walked with Jesus, right?
Yeah.
And so at the Last Supper, when before Jesus was betrayed, he was sold out for, Jesus was sold out for 30 pieces of silver, because they finally got to Judas because of his greed issue. So they offer him 30 pieces of silver to sell out this miracle worker working mm-hmm. with indescribable power that's never been seen before. And so they have him, he agrees to sell him out, betray him for 30 pieces of silver, which would have been the equivalent of $300 in today's money. Not a lot of money to sell out the man who said, I've come from heaven and I am Father or one, not the guy you want to sell out. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so at the Last Supper, he says to him, Jesus says to Judas, he says, what you're going to do or what you do, do quickly. And then the Bible says, then Satan entered him. So here we have this spirit of greed, or this functioning in this greed the whole time. And then at that opportune, at that right time, it said Satan entered him.
Uh-huh.
So he was operating or functioning in this, under this influence for so long. And then there was a point where it just, boom, it just entered him.
Gotcha.
And so it is with us. So it's like we operate under, spirits of lust or spirits of greed or spirits of pharmakoi, which where we get our term pharmaceutical or pharmacy. And that word in the Greek means sorceries.
Huh.
And in the book, I make this connection between ancient mysticism and today's pharmaceuticals. And I start to explain why people say they're hearing voices is because they're opening themselves up through these sorceries or pharmakoi or pharmaceuticals, and people are hearing voices because they're open. These types of opioids are opening people up to this spiritual dimension and being infiltrated into where they're actually hearing voices.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I cover a wide swath.
Yeah.
But anyway, the longer we operate in a certain behavior under the influence of a spirit, whatever spirit, at some point we get infested by it.
Yeah.
So it is a process to become possessed by it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, it reminds me, I recently learned about this term called looshing, which is kind of like energy harvesting from entities. Are you familiar with that term?
No, I would imagine that it has something to do with feeding off of the energy of a human to acquire power.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what it is. I mean, is that what you mentioned that some of these demonic entities will try to influence a person to end their lives or just break down? Yes. Are there any other goals in mind for these things? Are they just looking and feeding off of like fear and that kind of thing for, you know, greater power?
Well, I mean, the more you function in it, the more powerful it gets, but the more it entrenches in your life. Hmm. So I don't know if it so much gives it more power, but it gives it more influence in your life, and it gives it what we'll call like a stronghold, to use a military term. Like, you know, an enemy goes into a battlefield and he sets up his stronghold in the battlefield, right? So, this is what these things do. They set up a stronghold in people's lives. So the more we engage in these things, the more rooted and more stronger it gets. The evil influence gets, it takes hold, it takes root deeper.
Gotcha.
So is that energy harvesting? I don't know if that's the same thing, but it definitely gains more traction in your life the longer we progress down the road of whatever it is we're engaging in.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So you've been able to perceive these kinds of entities. Are there certain types of people out there that are more able to see these things, like psychics and mediums? And then there's also, I've heard this time and time and again, of when we're younger, our minds have like a higher sensitivity to, you know, see the spiritual and see beyond the veil. And are these types of people more susceptible to this type of having to interact with this type of stuff? Or is it just really anybody is open game, if you will?
I mean, we are in the middle of like this cosmic battle, so everybody is open game. But what I will say is that children are more susceptible. And the younger you can influence their mind through evil, the more you can distort their processes, their ideology, their thinking, you can twist their nature, and confuse them. But the kids are smart, man. I mean, they know when something's wrong.
Yeah, they do.
they are very, very vulnerable. And, you know, I talk about them being targeted at age zero in the book, because that's how early that these demonic forces want to influence the kids at an ever earlier age.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we see that happening in certain instances today. And now for psychics and for psychic people and palm readers and those types of people, are they receiving? Are they seeing? Yes, they are receiving, but they're not receiving by what they think they're receiving from. They believe that they're receiving from spirit guides. They think that they're hearing from, you know, animal spirits or, you know, dead loved ones and things of that nature. But those are all demonic deception. What they're actually hearing from are from demonic evil forces. They're hearing from evil angels. And so, yes, they are hearing something and they are seeing something, but it's not what they think that they're seeing.
Huh. Interesting.
Or thought to believe. They've been thought to believe that that's what that is, because they're highly deceptive. Like I said before, these function in high level of deceit and deception. And And that's, so that's why they believe that they're, you know, seeing and hearing from these other entities when they're actually evil spirits in disguise.
Interesting. Interesting. Would there be a way to know whether or not you actually could contact a good entity, or is that, do the demonic entities kind of have, you know, a moratorium on Earth for lack of a better word there?
Well, these are very, first you have to understand, these are highly, highly sinister beings.
Yeah.
So there are no good demons. Right. Now, what they do, and this is a very, very highly manipulative and deceitful thing, is they hide their evil behind walls of good. And so you can think that you're doing a good thing. You could think that you're believing a good ideology. You can think that you're championing in a good cause. But behind that is actually a demonic and sinister forces.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
The poison in the apple.
Right. Right. Yeah. But I guess my question was really, I guess, is there are good entities out there, like angels that haven't fallen.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
right.
There are. Yes.
But if people think they're trying to contact them, it's not really possible, or it's just because the evil entities kind of block that out, or how does that work?
I believe that there are good angels sent on assignment, that people do have protective angels. We're not to worship them. The Bible, whenever an angel shows up in the Bible and someone falls down at their feet, they say, "Get up, do not worship me. Get up, get up." And so they will not accept worship. Satan and these forces, they will accept worship. And so the good angels, righteous angels, or they're warrior angels. Let me just dispel something. They're not babies with wings. These are a war culture. These are very, you know, they're like Vikings, you know, they're like celestial Vikings. And so, cause they're a war and culture, cause they're in battle. Mm-hmm. Right. They're still in battle, and they're still sent on assignment to battle, and they're still sent, you know, to protect and to lead and to guide. Right. But we're not to worship them. And the Bible says there's one mediator between God and man, and that's the man, Christ Jesus. And so he's the one we're supposed to be communicating with between him and God. And that's how we get to God. So why am I going to try to contact an angel when I can go to God?
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. That's making some sense now. let's see here. What do you think about aliens? Is there like a connection between aliens, or a connection to like the Fae, the fairy realm? You know, I've heard theories that people think that they might be demonic. I know that, you know, Tom DeLonge, Blink 182 to the Stars Academy, and he recently did an interview where he said he, you know, couldn't sleep for 3 days after finding out some truths about the UFO phenomena. And there's a lot of chatter about like interdimensionality. And I wonder how that could potentially tie into some of this.
Yeah. Well, first of all, yes, they are interdimensional beings, because I believe that these are, again, another form of demonic masquerade. It's basically the devil and dark forces with a mask on. And if you look at what they do, they're always trying to say, we're going to give you knowledge or wisdom. Well, that goes back to day one in the Garden of Eden. That's how Eve was deceived. Eve was deceived from the knowledge. You were going to be like God, knowing good and evil. So the temptation has in man has always been for knowledge, and they always use the same thing. And these entities do the same thing. If you look into it, they're always saying, or they're always offering some form of knowledge, right?
Yeah.
So I think this, and I think the further we go, I believe that we're really heading into the last days, or we're in the last days. And so what the Bible says is like, that the last days before the coming of the Son of Man, or before the return of Jesus Christ, it's going to look just like it did in the days of Noah. So in the days of Noah, what was happening there was that there were falling entities, fallen evil spirits mating or having sex with the women and impregnating them and creating a spawn or a race, which was half evil angel and half human. And this spawned the race of giants called the Nephilim.
Right.
And it was so with the similarity is beings coming down, beings manifesting themselves.
Yeah.
Right. So I believe that as we keep progress, as the days progress, we're going to start seeing more and more of this stuff. We're going to see more demonic manifestations. We're going to see more false miracles. We're going to see false Christs, and we're going to see all kinds of very, very strange things as we go further and further into what I believe the last days.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so to answer that, I think also think UFOs are also, in my opinion, are basically a demonic fireworks show. So it's like they show up, they appear, they just mysteriously appear. And sometimes you can see them like a gauzy, hazy light, you know, and they just speed off. It's just impossible to do. So to me, these are just, it's spiritual stuff is what we're seeing.
Okay.
But people think, or are deceived into thinking, or made to think that these are actual, you know, objects from outer space. But to me, it's a demonic masquerade.
Interesting. Okay. I wanted to touch on exorcisms for a minute. This is something you talk about in your book, right?
I go into it with in chapter 2. It's called American Demoniac, and that's the story of the maid and the minister. I do talk about that.
How would you say movies like The Exorcist and others like it are, do you think that those are kind of an accurate representation of what goes on with that kind of thing when priests are brought in to aid people who are undergoing possession?
Yeah, I mean, in some regards, I mean, some things are hokey, but some things are dead on. I mean, they'll start cursing and swearing and, you know, denying Christ and cursing Christ and anything holy or whatever, anything of that nature. So that is a hallmark of that, of vileness. They're just, they're just vile creatures. Some movies actually got it really right. And one of them was The Conjuring, in regards to what happens to somebody's face. And what happens is it gets very angular. And because it's another face in the face, but that face's structure is protruding through. So you'll see these very angular lines, sharp angular lines within somebody's face. And so it's like The Conjuring got that right.
I haven't seen that movie in a while. I'm just trying to bring up an image. I'm like, yeah, that's
yeah. yeah, Yeah, The Conjuring got that right. Emily Rose had some very stuff right, you know, speaking demonic languages and things of that nature, back, you know, disjointed, you know, kind of, you know, bodily contortions, that kind of stuff is real. And so the movies, they get it right in some regards, but then, it, you know, some stuff is hokey, you know, but they, there are some things that they do get right. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Now, you know, obviously you don't want to invite this kind of stuff into your life, you know,
No.
You probably want to stay away from Ouija boards or things like that. You know, I've heard stories of people who have had weird poltergeist type phenomena happen after they used a Ouija board, or, you know, some kind of spirit comes through because there's an opening and they attach to you. Are there, you know, any advice for people out there to get a leg up on warding these things off from messing with you?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, a lot of people don't, because they're intrigued and they're searching for answers and they're searching for things, so they gravitate towards all of this spectrum, and that could be, you know, Ouija boards, that could be palm reading, that could be spiritists, that could be necromancing, or, you know, conjuring the dead or trying to speak to dead relatives, and all these branches of a tree. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's all rooted in, you know, satanic and demonic and forces and influence. And so these things actually do open the door for these things to invite these things into your life. And if you were to try to get the demon to leave, it would say something to the effect that, well, I was invited. They want me here. I was invited. Well, the reason it was invited was because you opened up this thing for it to come through, and yeah, you allowed it access to your life. Now, did you really invite it and say, hey, demon, come into me? No, but you opened up to the door to where they say it's an invitation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, because no one probably in their right mind would say, hey, demon, come on into me, right? So these things are actually, you know, they're welcomed in by these occultic practices and occultic things of divination and all that stuff. Hmm. And how you ward them off is there is no real human means to ward them off. You can't burn sage and, you know, say cute little, you know, little prayers or anything of that nature. The only way to get rid of or to be protected from them is you need someone bigger, badder, and meaner than those entities themselves to drive them away for you. And that is the man Jesus Christ. He's given such incredible power to his followers that he said, I give you power to trample on snakes and scorpions and all the power of the enemy being Satan and demonic forces. And when you think about it, it's like this incredible, incredible thing that he handed this supernatural power into frail human beings to overcome and to dispel and to basically ward off these highly intelligent, highly powerful demonic forces just with the name and that, you know, in the authority of Jesus Christ. That's how you get rid of them. It's only in one name. It's in his name alone.
Gotcha. Wow. So what would you say is the end goal of these entities? Do they want to rule the world? You know,
well, he already does that.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. And there's going to come a time that there'll might be, you know, end times, like you said, is that like the time where these things would be wiped out, or, you know, what's the deal with that?
Well, end times would be ruled by the man who was Antichrist. You've heard of the Antichrist, right?
Oh, yes. So
So the Antichrist is a man who was influenced by Satan, like full on. He's not walking around like possessed and, you know, with jerking joints and stuff like yeah. that, but he's fully animated and fully possessed of Satan. And he's a puppet for evil. And so it's going to be, the last days are going to be ruled by him. The last days are going to be a one world monetary economic system. And no one's going to be able to buy, sell, or trade without a chip in their hand or in their forehead. And I just watched a news report last week that some people were literally doing that. So that's why I say that either we're in the last days, or we're on the precipice of the last days, because it's mathematically impossible for a man from 2,000 years ago to write precisely what was going to happen 2,000 years ahead of him by receiving what we call now in the Bible, the mark of the beast.
Right. Yeah.
So it's mathematically impossible, but he called it. So he couldn't have called it a microchip, because that's why he had to call it a mark, because there was no such technology remotely even in the mind of that culture,
right,
or for thousands of years. But he was so precise, he called it a mark, right? So you receive a mark in your hand. So these last days are going to be marked by false miracles, an antichrist, false christs working on antichrist behalf. So he has like a number two player there with him who's doing these false miracles. And it's going to be hallmarked by a one world monetary system that we use within our hands, by paying within our hands.
Jeez.
Because like you're either going to be coerced to do it, right? Because think about it, people are going to easily take the mark of the beast, right? And then now, I don't know if they're going to come out and advertise it as the mark of the beast, but what it's going to be is it's going to be touted as something good. Remember the poison in the apple?
Right. Yeah.
All right, this is the poison in the this is the poison in the apple.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be good. It's going to have all of your information right there. Right. No one's going to be able to steal it from you. Oh, now, and that's good. Oh, you're not going to. Your banking information now, it's not going to get stolen. And now you don't need keys anymore. So that's a good thing. And you can't work without it now. So then now what are you going to do? Right.
Yeah.
you can't eat now without it.
Yeah.
Now what are you going to do?
You get cornered.
That's right.
Accepting.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Mm. And it says no man, great or small, is without it.
Interesting.
And so, so we're starting to see it, because the technology is right on the horizon. Just do like a little bit of research. You'll see that there are people out there already using it. And Sweden started doing it years ago with just kind of getting into the office and stuff. But it was, you know, it's kind of a precursor to where things would come to now. And they started doing it years ago. And when they started putting in the tracker stuff in the pets, and I said, this is the precursor to the mark. And they're like, oh, you're crazy. No, they're just doing it for the pets.
Hmm.
Right. It's always just as a minimizing word.
Right. Yeah.
to mask greater evils. And so, you know, I said, all right, come talk to me in 10, 15 years.
We'll see.
I do think that we're whether we're in it or on the precipice of it, the fact of the matter is that there's people with a mark in their hand.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess you can't deny that. And I've certainly seen articles of people putting microchips in their body, you know,
right.
not my thing, man. I don't want to do it.
No, but if you start getting hungry, you know,
this is how it gets done,
man. I think COVID was a soft launch.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I guess it's going to be an interesting world these next couple of years, I'm sure.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, we're at the top of the hour here, MR. Can you let my audience know where they can find you?
You can find me at on Instagram at m.r.gorga and on Facebook at mrgorga. And you can find my book, Demons Among Us, Shocking Real Life Stories from the Paranormal. You can get it on Amazon and Kindle and paperback versions. And I'll have the audiobook version hopefully soon. I don't have the exact date because it keeps getting pushed, but that's coming. I will have an audiobook soon. And also available on other platforms. And so, but for right now, it's exclusively on Amazon. And get yourself a copy. You will not be disappointed.
All right. Great. Well, thank you again, MR, for coming on the show. And we'll chat with y'all next time.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks again to MR Gorga for coming on to the show. And I'll throw links in the show notes, as always, for all of you all to check out his work. It was definitely a very interesting chat, and I'll leave it up to you to decide. Could there really be demonic forces at work out there? Or maybe not even demonic, maybe negative entities of some sort from another plane, some kind of interdimensional beings that exist in tandem with our dimension that can sometimes cross over. Clearly, MR Gorga is of the opinion that, you know, there's some religious stuff connected with all of this, but who knows? I'm certainly no theologian or expert in the subject, but it's certainly something to think about. As always, this show wouldn't be possible without the support of listeners like you. Anytime you download the show, share it with friends and family, it helps out the show so much, and it inspires me and drives me to always bring you the best content, the most interesting stuff that I can. I love getting into all of these topics on high strangeness and cryptids and the paranormal and UFOs. It's, of course, always something that I've been interested in, and we're only just getting started. There's so much more to talk about, so stay tuned and keep on listening. I mentioned my Patreon at the start of the show, so the other way that you can support the Strangeology podcast and what I'm doing here is to head on over to my merch store, which is an Etsy shop at strangeology.etsy.com, where you can find a plethora of cryptid, alien, and otherwise Fortean designs. And I'm always adding new designs and throwing them up on the shop. We're just about to get into the holiday season, so I'm hoping to have some time to get some new designs in there. I'm working on some new enamel pins to expand that collection of merch, which is super fun, of course. And I'm also planning on expanding the shop aspect of Strangeology into its own website separate from Etsy as well. So that's going to be a project in the background that hopefully I'll have live before the end of the year. So stay tuned on that. If you haven't been to my Etsy shop before, though, it's got a ton of listings. There's cryptids of the Home State Cryptid Collection, which has all 50 states from the U.S. There's actually 60 designs there because several states have multiple cryptids like West Virginia, California, Texas, and I plan on doing some additional ones in the future, of course, but I think first I need to do some whole country collections. I do have a Nessie design for Scotland, so I might as well do some other stuff for the UK. And you can get these designs on t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, tank tops, stickers, magnets, posters, pins, all sorts of stuff. Of course, I also have my home state cryptids map, which people are digging a lot. I sold a bunch of those at the Sasquatch Calling Festival this past weekend, but they are available up on the shop as well. And again, that is strangeology.etsy.com. Your support is always appreciated. And don't forget to check out my website, strangeology.com. You can sign up for my newsletter and also check out the blog as well. I'm hoping to get some new articles up there soon. And if you'd like to have your ads on the Strangeology podcast and want to talk about sponsorships, please submit all business inquiries to info@strangeology.com. Okay, that's it from me for now. For Patreon members, make sure to stick around after this short break. MR Gorga agreed to stay on for a few more minutes to share some truly terrifying and bizarre encounter stories of his own. So as I always say, until next time, take care of yourselves and each other, and keep it strange. All right, welcome back to Strangeology Beyond. For all you members out there, this has been a really engaging and interesting, insightful conversation.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.